Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show! Everybody, welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Burchie. Jacob is here.
Hey there.
And we're very happy. We finally, this is a first time event on AnCast. I'm pretty sure first time. Our special guest for our series discussion of the show From the New World is Max Hall. He is you know him as moderator Gallup on the forums. Max, thanks for coming on the show.
Hi guys, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I just want to say thank you very much for your service on our forums. I get to say thank you in person, and that means a lot to me. So thank you. Like, we really do appreciate the work you guys do. It really means a lot.
Yeah, no problem. It's nice to be able to, you know, AN's one of the forums, only anime forums that I find that's, you know, civil, and I find because of the moderation to some extent, you know?
Well, to a large extent, yeah. I would say. Like, it's funny because, like, I feel like our forums have a little bit of a reputation for being, like, acrimonious, you want to say? Like, let's be kind and say acrimonious. But I think our forums now, like a modern, like a sober modern assessment, would say that the ANN forums are, like, some of the most civil out there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Jacob, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I mean, we're all sitting here tooting our own horn.
Well, no, but that was back when I was first looking for, like, a place to talk about an anime back in, like, 2006. it was still the case. It was like, oh, this is the most civil place to talk about anime. So.
And yet, the reputation. That's probably my fault. All right, let's talk about this show, because I was not expecting to really love this show, and I totally did. This show is called From the New World. It came out in 2012, right sort of at the dawn of real streaming, you know, simulcasting the whole season kind of a thing. Like, that was sort of getting started around 2012. 2012 was kind of the start of the big nerd boom in general. Mm-hmm. You know, that's when, you know, the Avengers came out and the first Hobbit movie and all that stuff. So that's kind of when nerd culture in general was taking off. And this, I would characterize it as a sleeper hit.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was, I don't know if, this was about the point where people following the season stream by stream was, like, new but not super new. Like, a streaming anime had been viable for like a year or something.
Couple years, yeah.
Yeah, and to where everybody would be like following a season without having to be super into fan subs or whatever. And this was one of the shows that the, I guess you could call them artsy farts, would talk about a lot. Like, and that's not an insult. I consider myself in that group of like people who like, oh, I like this because it's, you know, criticism, social commentary. But yes, like, that was the one that was touted by the artsy farts. It was not a... like common viewership hit, like say around the similar time like Angel Beats was, where a lot of otaku were talking about it. It was like the people who like anime criticism were talking about this show, in my experience.
Yeah, right. And so, Jacob, did you watch it as it came out? No,
no. I saw the first six episodes as they came out, and then I gave up and came back to it just before this podcast, actually.
Right. That's actually my kind of experience with the show as well, is that I watched it like one episode and said like, meh. And then people started talking about it a lot. And it's one of those things I always meant to get to. And here I am. The one thing I will say about the show is my perception of it going in was that it was loaded to bear with a bunch of underage Yuri fan service. Like, I thought that's what the show had in it. I don't know where I got that impression. I think that's what people mostly talked about. But the manga is largely just fan service. It's just this, but it's apparently it sucks. That's what I've been told. Max can tell us a little bit more about that. But my perception was of this show was like, oh, I think it has a bunch of like uncomfortable, like there's something uncomfortable in that show, and that's why it's not heralded as this like big masterpiece. Otherwise, it would be if it didn't have that stuff in it. That was sort of my perception going in. Having seen it now, my conception of it is completely different. Right. But that's what I thought going in, is that had been highlighted to me as a big part of this.
Mm-hmm. And that was the thing that got me to give up on it the first time. It wasn't because, ooh, Yuri, that wasn't the issue. It was, I wasn't grossed out by the show. It's just, it struck me immediately as like sort of a YA classic sci-fi thing. And I was like, okay, that's cool. But it does devote like an entire episode to the free love aspect of the society where everybody just sort of bones everybody else. And I wasn't grossed out. It's just that up to that point, there had been a lot of info dumping and some tone weirdness. So I was already on the edge. And that was like the thing that made me do the Seinfeld gif where he goes, okay,
yeah,
he
right.
leaves. Like,
yeah.
It was like that. It wasn't like, ugh, I'm done. It was maybe later. This is a little much. But, and I kind of left at the worst part to leave because I think the show, like, really, really picks up after that. But that was when I had reached my limit. I was like, okay, this is a little, like, silly. So I'll come back later.
So, Max, how did you come to the show?
I was actually aware of it for a few months before it came out, like, just seeing the key art and being like, whoa, this looks really interesting. Because there's, like, this, like, Saki standing in this grassy field with this thatched roof building in the background and, like, the rat next to her. And it's like, that is weird looking. And then I saw the previews and I was like, okay, yeah, this is really interesting. I don't, what's the deal with this? This is looks like something that could be really different and cool. And I was a little like, oh man, you know, these character designs, they're like these, you know, kind of sort of cutesy looking people. Again, that concern was not, didn't end up being a problem. But it was actually the first thing I saw on Crunchyroll. That was the beginning of that for me. And I saw it while it was airing, you know, week to week, watching it pretty much as fast as I could because I was so enthralled by it, you know.
Right, right. Yeah, I cannot fathom watching this week to week. I think I would get too frustrated.
It's a lot, yeah.
Yeah, like it's one of those things where the only thing you're waiting is to find out what happens next. And if it's not like it's not a situation where, like, because there are shows where that's not the case, where you're getting more out of it.
Chunks.
Yeah, you can break it up in a bite. Like, it's okay. Like, I only need 1 hour of Better Call Saul a week, right? I don't need more than that. But, like, this one, I just devoured it, like, in big chunks, because I just wanted to know what was going to happen next.
Sure made me think about it, you know, a lot in the interim period of, like, oh, man, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah, what the hell's going on?
Being a period of 6 months where that's going on is, it's something, I'll say that.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, so what was your, were you just captivated by it from the get-go? Like, it, you know.
Actually, I usually like to, you know, sort of hold out on my opinions of things until the end. But with this, I knew that it was something special probably about like 30 seconds into it when like they're that sort of child's chorus of altered Dvorak's Ninth Symphony with electric guitar plays as they sort of go in this boat under the ropes and into that weird building. I'm just like, okay, yeah, this is where it's at.
I mean,
snap decision, but it ended up being right.
The weird thing is, as I watched this, I started watching it, I think last week, and I remembered the first episode, and I was like, why didn't I react strongly to this the first time I saw it? I feel like I should have, or maybe would have. I don't know. Like, a lot's changed in my life between now and 2012, right? But this time I watched the first episode, and I was like, oh shit. Well, I am on board for this. Like, let's watch this. Like, that seems great. But the first time, I guess it just didn't really grab me. I don't know what's up.
Well, it was the same for me. I was intrigued by it. I did not... when I came back, so I watched it in 2012 as well when it was first coming out on Crunchyroll, and I gave up on episode 6 or 7. Whenever they all start fucking, that's when I gave up. And but I remembered the show. Coming back to it now in 2016, I remembered everything that happened. So it wasn't like it didn't leave a strong impression on me. It was just that... It felt so much like an adaptation of a book, to the extent where you're watching passages where it's like, I bet this was a little less rocky in a paragraph. And the other thing is, this is a good thing about the show, but it is something that kind of keeps you pushed away if you're watching one a week. It is an eternal atmosphere of foreboding. Like, it is so heavy and like, oh, like it's creepy the whole way through. And if you're, you know, it kind of maybe pushes you out a little bit if you're just not in the perfect mood for it. And that's just what ended up happening. So but when I came back to it, yeah, I devoured it, I guess.
All right. So we should start running down what this show is actually about. So From the New World is kind of a... post-apocalyptic sci-fi in the vein of something like The Handmaid's Tale, or it reminded me a little bit of Now and Then, Here and There, for whatever reason, slightly.
Pacified dystopia. Like, you have your... you have your authoritarian dystopias, which are like 1984, Fahrenheit 451, and then you have your pacifying dystopias, which are like A Handmaid's Tale or Brave New World.
Yeah.
The thing that reminded me most of this.
Well, okay, so that's a little obvious. I was about to say, the thing it pulls most from is the thing it shares a fucking title with, so it's a little obvious what it's pulling from the most. That part, you reminded me of that, because I hadn't read Aldous Huxley since fucking fourth grade or something like that.
Right.
So you reminded me of that. It's like, oh, right, and then it all kind of fell into place, like what was going on in the show. To start out, so it's 1,000 years after humanity developed latent sort of psychokinetic abilities, right? So humanity develops these psychokinetic abilities, and then everything goes to shit for like 1,000 years.
Right, because of course.
It's 1,000 years later, and now we're sort of looking at the dawn of whatever this is, and it's the society with powerful telekinetics who all live in this very bizarre sort of closed off world.
It's colonial.
Colonial. And then the rest of society are these monster rats, which are giant talking naked mole rats.
Yes. That's a better explanation. That's exactly what they are.
Right. Yeah.
Full of really different like body plans and stuff from each other and really weird, you know, appearances.
Yeah. Max, do you want to describe like what the situation of the main character, like, and the situation we're sort of in for the first like half of the show?
So initially, what's the pretty much going on is the main character Saki is going to school, and she's essentially she knows that there's something strange going on with her peers, and that when she graduates from like the elementary school to the high school, she thinks everyone says she's the last one to graduate, because you graduate when you gain your telekinetic abilities, which happens at puberty. But there were people after her, and then they just kind of dropped off the face of the earth, and she's like, well, what's going on with that? And no one else seems to really notice about this. And is also this like game where they play with these clay things and they're trained to use their powers, and some kid ends up cheating at that, and he disappears too. So it's pretty obvious that like the kids who are considered to be abnormal in some way are being removed from the society. And then they go on this camping trip in which they decide to capture this thing called a demon Minoshiro, which I guess to describe what the basis of that is, the life on Earth has changed a lot over 1,000 years, much more so than could be explained by natural evolution. And there's these big, like, sort of slug gummy things that run around, and like snakes that lay explosive eggs and stuff like that. But this thing is sort of a thing in itself, and they capture this thing, and it turns out it's intelligent, and it's this kind of like computerized repository of knowledge from the ancient world. And once they find this thing, they start asking it questions, and they're like, and I think to me the most like people complain about this section for being an info dump, because you know, it's, you know, this big thing where the synthetic Minoshiro talks about their history, which the kids were unaware. But I don't know, to me it's not like a problem, because it's a question and answer session. And to me, the more most salient thing is what these kids are asking it. Like, it shows you like what's hidden from them, what they don't know about, and they're basically asking, where does our society come from? What's the origin of our history? And from that, they learn essentially that there was this cataclysmic event in which the modern civilizations of our time failed in the presence of telekinesis. And after that, there was this long dark age in which those with power enslaved those who didn't have it, et cetera, et cetera. And they learn that the modern society has essentially genetically engineered its members to be unable to kill each other by having something called death feedback, where they will die if they use their powers on another person. And also the love stuff, which we'll get to later. And that's, once they figure this out, they essentially get in trouble with their society, and this monk finds them and steals their powers. He's going to get in trouble, and then that's derailed by the rats, which I guess you can go into.
Right. So the monster rats are a big part of the show. They are sort of a slave class.
Yeah, they are controlled. Basically, the reason that they are naked mole rats evolved is because, whoever maintained this society wanted it to be a society where a queen controls lesser members. And the only mammal that does that, like insects, is the naked mole rat. So sentient naked mole rats function as a society of subservience, where you have one queen and the colony is filled with a bunch of, like, whiny, whinging, rolling around in the mud, subservient creatures that humans don't have to be afraid of attacking them, because they're, because they're very easy to command around. If you have telekinesis and you're a human, they regard you as gods and you're fine. So, but unfortunately, like, they have a lot of civil wars between each other, colony against colony, and the kids get caught up in that when they're being drug away to be punished. They get caught up in that, and the guy who was taking them away dies, I believe. And, so they get involved in this whole war before they can go back home, and they learn a lot about monster rat society, and it's very gross, is the short version, but yeah.
Yeah, so, like, basically you have these kids who are positioned as telekinetic gods in a land where they are being controlled by God society. Outside of God society is a giant, warring country of slave factions. That's basically what you're looking at. Mm-hmm. These kids sort of start uncovering the whole truth about the past and where they came from and who they are and all that stuff. And the big thing comes out of the show, which is that if you can turn into something called a karma demon, mm-hmm. right, or a fiend, which is basically if you're a sociopath and you have the ability to kill people with your mind, you just start killing people.
Right. The idea is that there are two ways that the programming by which their ancestors put into them, where you don't kill people or else you'll die, can go wrong. One of those is turning into a fiend or ogre, where you're just a sociopath, which means death feedback doesn't work on you, which is, they just do their best to get rid of you as fast as possible. If you display any psychopathic tendencies whatsoever, you're gone. As a kid, they will drag you off. Karma demons are harder to parse, because karma demons are extremely empathic people. They're very good, very nice. Sometimes they are, usually they are the sweetest, kindest, and most cooperative members of society. But their problem is if they have too much telekinetic power that's being repressed by their extremely kind and empathic personality, so it comes out in other ways. So, like, just outside the city, that they've been conditioned to believe that this barrier that surrounds each colony is keeps all the bad stuff out. So if you're one of these karma demons, you have a great talent, but you repress your emotions, it will come out, it will leak out past the barrier and, like, create monsters and mutate people and explode people randomly. And it's not you doing it, it's just, unfortunately, you have too much power and not enough control over your own personality is the issue. So that's much harder to deal with, and yeah. So they teach them in schools, if you feel like maybe you're becoming a karma demon, you should kill yourself. Like, they teach that to them very young.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot in this show about the subconscious mind versus the conscious mind, and it's drawing from Buddhism on that front. But a big part of the show is that basically the world is poisoned. Humans develop latent psychic abilities, and their subconscious mind leaks out negative thoughts. So you're having a nightmare, and in the real world, the monsters in your nightmare manifest, and they manifest somewhere in the world, and you don't know where or anything like that.
Right.
Like, basically, just polluting the world.
Yeah, it'll be past the barrier that they have not subconsciously. They brainwashed you into thinking keeps all the bad stuff out. Which is good for them, but bad for every other creature that might live outside that.
Exactly. Which is a really interesting concept, but the show makes a lot of that, and the fiend concept has a lot to do with that part of it. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of explanation, but it's all worth it. So eventually they meet a character named Squealer, who is very central to all of this, and I feel like we should kind of get into the middle of this show and into the final act and then start talking a little bit about theme. So, Jacob, do you want to just run down Squealer, who he is in the show?
Right. So Squealer is, in their first altercation, when they're first being taken back to be punished, is the mole rat guy, monster rat guy that looks out for them the most. He takes care of them and keeps them safe through the entire Civil War thing that's going on, and brings them to another monsterette named Kiromaru who takes him back home. And all of this comes to bear fruit years later when, due to learning the truth, one of their members becomes a karma demon. He can't handle the truth. He can't reconcile it with his immense talent, and it drives him crazy. And you know, bad things happen. So he dies, and the rest of their group is brainwashed into believing that he never existed, because normally this doesn't happen. Normally they get rid of people young enough that you don't have to rewrite memories, but so they try to make him believe that he never existed, and all of it just goes badly to the extent that several other kids run away, and they all get tied back into the Monsterette thing, which is where Squealer reappears. He's like, okay, I can help you out. We can make this all go away. You know, by the way, our colony has been doing something... new recently, where we've decided to get rid of the queen. Like, they have to keep the queen around to make babies, so all the little larvals pop out of her and stuff like that, but they don't follow the queen's orders anymore. They've kept her, like, drugged up, and they just take the babies away. And he's like, we've tried democracy. We hear it works really good for you guys. So what's this about two of your kids going missing? Oh, that's really interesting. Well, we'll look after them for you, and you know, we'll tell your elders that they died, but we'll let them live out here with us, and, you know, everything's going to be peach keen. And the kids don't really trust Squealer, because it's like, did he learn too much about our society? Like, he's seen things like he recognizes the gods, humans can't attack other gods. He's seen some of the weaknesses in them, and he's starting, like, the gears are beginning to turn in his head. And so... that leads into basically the last third of the show, where Squealer, with all the knowledge that he has gathered up, kind of worms himself to human society enough so that he can declare this gigantic war on them, and using all sorts of techniques that people are just not prepared for, because he's learned enough about human society that he wants to overthrow it. He's like, we are the superior beings. We deserve to live as much as you guys, but we're being treated like lesser creatures. So
yeah, this is all enacted basically with the full horror of war.
Jesus.
This show is harrowing in a lot of different ways and in a lot of different episodes. Like, a lot of nasty shit happens in this show. Like, it's not messing around. It's serious about what it's trying to get across. Like those old books, like the dystopian sci-fi that it's pulling from, mm-hmm. It takes itself seriously. And, you know, with good cause, it's depicting some hellacious shit going down. And so the it's all very heavy, and it's all very intense.
Well, the direction is always, even from the beginning when they're little kids, like, learning how to move a clay ball back and forth with their telekinesis, the tone is foreboding. The show never really
creeping dread at all
times. There's never, like, a light moment. There kind of is, but it's just in service of more darkness coming. So by the end, it's very thoroughly exhausting. Like,
the tone is just always very, like... the environment and the atmosphere and the people, it's all just slightly menacing until like all hell breaks loose. And in those moments, it's just like really intense and, you know, war at no quarter and total this devastation.
Yeah. And the show weaves these characters and these events together so well that I felt like like no one really had plot armor. Like, mm-hmm. That anything could have happened. Mm-hmm. I had no idea where that show was going, and it wasn't written in such a way to where I felt like I felt like Saki could have died, and the show could have kept going. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
By the end, almost everyone does die.
Yeah, right. It's, you know, like, really
literally, almost literally like every single named character except Saki and Satoru, I think, is dead.
Right. Yeah. Spoilers. But yeah.
Sorry about that.
No. This is a spoiler cast. It's fine. It's an old show at this point, anyway. But like it's really, really fucking brutal. And I was shocked that it had a happy ending. I thought it wouldn't.
It's sort of happy.
It's a Hunger Games happy ending. No, it's exactly like the Hunger Games.
It is.
It's fucking exactly like the Hunger Games.
Some people don't consider the Hunger Games particularly happy either. It is a, well, maybe. Maybe we won't screw it up next time, you know, ending. For now, we have this peace, and maybe we won't screw it up in the future is sort of the
I think it is pretty positive in the sense of, you know, hey, you know, humanity is in the slow process of getting itself out of trouble, and that... If you look at what happened 1,000 years before and then where they're at in the beginning of the series, that's been a positive trend. And ultimately, you know, with Saki taking the reins of being the new leaders, it's like, okay, well, we can, this society can be a constructive thing. We can, you know, have some planning. We can have, you know, our policies about being about ideas rather than just ideologies, because, you know, the And I think it's the fact that they, you know, have a sense of where they want their society to go is what makes the ending hopeful, you know?
Yeah. No, they definitely come to some conclusions. Like, well, we think it's again, this show is all painted in shades of gray. Like, there are no good guys. There are no bad guys. Like, everyone's carving out a living for themselves in this horribly brutal world that they find themselves in. And it's like, at no point does the show give you super easy answers. And so the ending is also not an easy answer. It's just leaning positive, which I was, again, surprised to see. But the ending is in line with the rest of the show thematically. And to that point, I would say that From the New World is a great show that acts and looks exactly like classic message science fiction, and yet I feel like I don't really quite know what the definitive statement that this show is trying to make is. Jacob, do you have any, like, what is this show, what is From the New World saying?
Well, I think the very last frame of the show being a painting in the hall of the elementary school, they show the only happy times, the only times of, like, joy and hope you see are in the elementary school days, the little kids. And so I think the show deliberately going back to a, what would you call it? It's like a calligraphy thing that's hanging on the wall of the elementary school where it says imagination is the greatest gift or something like that. I think that is ultimately the show's statement is that freedom, basically, even if humanity evolves into this race of, like, telekinetic people who, if somebody is so inclined, can blow up another person by thinking about it, it is better to give people freedom than it is to try and control that. And I think, it's not saying, it's very, very careful about it because it's not saying, oh, at the cost of some weaker lives, it's better to be free. It's not like that. It's just taking away people's ability to fight for themselves, I guess. Like, taking away people's ability to defend themselves and to think for themselves is, in and of itself, destroying humanity, which is why when Squealer argues at the end, after he's put on trial for, you know, killing most of humanity, he says, I am human, we are human, we're fighting for what we believe in, which is equality for our species. And it turns out, in a twist, they actually are from the human genome way back when, and they were mutated over many centuries because people with telekinetic powers had put this thing in where, oh, we can't kill people, but people who don't have telekinetic powers can still kill people with their own hands. So we need to make them not look like people anymore.
It's
so
fucked up.
Yeah, it's fucked up, you know. So it's interesting, and that in and of itself is also wrong. Like, that's also heinous. But I think the show is concluding that these there's an old canard about pacifying dystopias like Brave New Worlds, which is to say that they're more horrifying than authoritarian dystopias, because in authoritarian dystopias, somebody said H.G. Wells believed that, was afraid of a world where people would ban books, and he's referring to 1984. Said Aldo Huxley was afraid of a world where people would no longer have any desire to read books. And that's much more frightening. And so, From the New World is a world where people cannot really conceive of the idea of fighting for themselves or having a personal identity. They're all just sort of, you know, livestock. It's human livestock. And so, the literal slave colonies are more human than they are by virtue of having agency, and they, you know, they slaughter them. So, I think basically what From the New World is saying is, like, even though it could result in atrocities, and even though it's very scary, you need to give people the ability to forge for themselves. You can't treat people like babies. You can't treat things that you're afraid of like... The show comes up with a metaphor for, like, having stacks upon stacks of eggs that haven't hatched yet, and it's like, just because you're afraid that some of those eggs might hatch into like, dragons instead of chickens, you can't just crush all the eggs. Is basically what it's saying.
Yeah. Freedom isn't free.
Right.
That's what the show is saying, ultimately. Now, yeah, the freedom narrative, that was, like, the most obvious, that was, like, the most surface thing, but the show is painting such broad strokes, like, it's this huge canvas. The show's talking about big, cosmic, significant things, like, all of society, and, like, what we should all do in, like, it's very big. And so for the show to ultimately have that freedom message, but then ultimately be a little ethereal otherwise, I was a little like, oh, okay, maybe that's why this show didn't quite catch as like a giant hit. Because while I'm sitting there watching it, I'm like, why isn't this more popular? Because it feels like it should be.
I don't know. I think it feels it's off putting. Like people do.
I really loved it though.
I know I like it a lot, but I think people do watch anime to escape sometimes and to feel good and to feel energized. And that show's emotionally draining. And
it's also confusing for big parts of it. Yeah. And it's purposefully obtuse all of the time. So you know, yeah.
There's just so much going on, you know, that it's kind of almost hard to explain what the plot is, you know, and like. The fact that you have to think about why things are happening and what, you know, oh, what does this imply? You know, what's the deal with what I was just thinking about here? I can see it being a little bit of a difficult thing for a lot of some people to, you know, really get into if they're not. You have to be committed to it. You know,
yes.
it's a thing where it's like they just really just went for it. They're not holding your hand. They're just, you know. Here's what this is. You got to make your own judgments on it and think about what's going on and figure out things and for yourself, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, like, I would put it on par. Like, so we mentioned The Hunger Games. Like, these two are very close in my mind because they're both YA that punch above their weight that do a really good job of it. Mm-hmm. Like, I would say this has narrative thrills. Like, if you found the story twists and everything in The Hunger Games to be, like, exciting, this show is, like, thrill a minute, especially in the last, like, two-thirds. So the last half of the show is very exciting. Mm-hmm. Like, it's really compelling. It's terrifying and horrifying in many instances, but you can't look away.
Yeah. It's very, very first half of the 20th century classic sci-fi stuff when people...
Yeah, were, yeah.
When technology was changing, it was pre-internet and it was pre-information age stuff. I mean, information age, yes, but it was pre, like, super information age, but it was explosion of technology where all of this great sci-fi was coming out, mostly from old British dudes, but whatever, like, where it was very, very prescient about things to come. It's exactly in that vein if you like that stuff.
Max, did you have any other thoughts, like, on the show as a whole?
Yeah, so, I guess the main things I have to say about it is what I like the most is how it, wants to lead you to make your own judgments about what you see.
Yes.
In that, like, I actually, you know, and the fact that there is a lot of disagreement among people about what the sort of morality of certain things is, like, I actually don't, I wouldn't really call it a dystopia. I mean, I think that they were really successful at painting a society that's completely different than ours and is kind of neither entirely functional nor entirely dysfunctional. And it's sort of, to me, it's like a mirror in which we can see our own society as by being different enough to be a point of comparison. Like, you can see that their society is to a large extent ruled by fear, but I don't think that I wouldn't say it's the case that ours isn't. It's just that they're afraid of different things, and those fears push them down tracks that we wouldn't, you know, go down. And the way they handle what's going on is just a completely different kind of way. And our society has parallels that are too, like a lot of bad shit goes down here too, and it's. Like, for example, the first half of the 20th century was pretty rough for us in that, like, you know, the world wars, the flu pandemic, the depression, you know, and that is sort of, to me, a sense of those previous societies, like the, you know, 1800s colonial societies failing in the presence of industrialization, whereas our society in this show failed in the presence of telekinesis. And what that kind of says is, you know, the future is weird, you know, like, it's just going to be. It's the thing where you're not going to anticipate what's going to happen. It's completely out there. And I don't think the future will be, you know, this, but it'll be certainly be just as strange. And if I were to say what the ultimate, try to boil all this down into one point, I think the point of the show is, say, what this is saying, and this is most clearly, I think, shown in the Karmic Demons with Shun shit, is humans have all these dark tendencies, have all these rampant emotions, all these fears, all these anxieties, and all this stuff. But what is the true human, what is the true value of humanity is the intellect that manages to go beyond that, in that our only enemy is our subconscious, is the stuff that came with us from the animal brain, from our evolution. And the fact that we're intelligent is the thing that is going to enable us to survive into the future.
Right.
Right. That reminds me of, again, the way the show... The note the show decides to go out on, I think, is most helpful in determining what, you know, what answers it has, if any, for all the crazy stuff that happened because of the way society was structured. But I think it's interesting that we see the last project of the two surviving. Like, it was a group of five kids, well, six, I guess, six kids, and only two are left by the end. And what they're choosing to do, along with, like, have a baby and repopulate the Earth, is they're raising kittens, specifically these kind of like monster cats that are called impure cats, and they are the animal that the previous society used to take bad children away in the night. Like, it's, like they run up and like, and they're trying to run up and grab you by the neck specifically so you won't scream or anything, and then take you away. And that, yeah. So if anybody is like maybe going to be an ogre / psychopath, or maybe going to be a karmic demon / you know, too talented for their own personality, then the cat will come up and snatch you by the neck and take you away. But we see the cats very peaceful and very happy, and other times, like, they're not murderous monsters. And the person who's training them says, oh, don't worry, they won't attack unless I say. So they're a pretty good microcosm for what humans have become, which is like, oh, they won't do this unless I say, they won't, you know. And it's like, but you've made them the worst of themselves. If you do say so, then they'll become the worst of themselves. And so I think in the end, showing them raising these kittens as just cats, just letting them be cats, and it's like maybe they'll hurt somebody, or maybe they won't, but they are free to make their own choices. And so they show that, and then they dissolve to all the children that have died, like all her friends that are gone. Mm-hmm. And you look at them, and you're like, if the conditioning wasn't such as it was, would Shun have become a karmic demon? Like, is it, you know, I don't think he would have become that way on his own. That all comes from repression. Like, if he had had, like, therapy, and they had been taught the truth, and he wouldn't have responded to the truth so negatively that it caused this big problem. And, you know, it's like, if they had been raised honestly without this mind control and without this brainwashing and all this other stuff, would it have been different? And, you know, it's like, so maybe just let the kittens be kittens, even if they might hurt somebody. You know, I don't know.
Right, yeah. Again, freedom. It's not free. Yeah. One thing I wanted to point out, this is really, really important. This show, I couldn't believe how unbelievably creative the direction was.
Oh, yeah.
Every frame of painting, like, this show goes on wild, surreal flights of fancy, apropos of nothing in some cases, and it tickled me pink. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, that is exactly what I like to see in anime, is somebody just getting crazy in the middle of an episode. Like, there are shots in the show that could be from a completely different show that are just in that episode, and it's all it all of it connects. Like, there's a thread, a design thread through all of this. Even though the show takes on wildly different styles, sometimes it looks like it's animated completely differently. It uses different character designs. Like, there's an opening shot in the beginning of, like, episode 3 that takes place, in, like, 500 years after telekinetic powers are discovered, that is a guy attacking a temple or attacking a palace. That is done in a totally different style from the rest of the show. Yeah. Has amazing cuts of like, there's Sakuga stuff in there, like balls to the wall Sakuga on this thing.
Yeah,
and that's just in there. That's just in episode 3, and you'll see other sequences like that, especially as it gets towards the end. But anytime the show wants to do something creative, it seems like it just does visually. And every episode had thrilling things to look at. Like, I was very like, I could have just not even had the subtitles on and turned the audio off and just been like, "Yep, I'm gonna watch this abstract surrealist painting move for a while." Like, it visually, this thing, a masterpiece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the artistic I don't know, pinnacle is the right word, because every episode had something really, really neat. But the artistic pinnacle to me, and the point at which it really got my attention, it went from being I don't know to like, okay, I'm locked in, is when Shun, the karmic demon, basically loses his shit.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He has to go, amazing. Basically, yeah, when his powers become to the point where he can't control them whatsoever because of his denial and because of the shock that he's, the trauma that he's been under recently, He just runs away to as far as he can, and the world around him shifts. So when Saki, his girlfriend that comes looking for him, she steps through like normal world and into like Shun's messed up like mind world where like CG mixes with that seems like a bad yeah, mixing CG and traditional animation has been weird in the past, but like this is pretty effortless where it just seems like this you hit the acid too hard. Warped place, and he has this like shack that's in the middle of an aurora borealis that's in a lake that is canted sideways and concave or convex, I guess. And his poor puppy dog, he had like a bulldog, and it's warped the bulldog too, so that he has like 1,000 teeth and a like weird eyes, and yeah, it's messed up. And it's like, oh no, and he puts a mask over his face so that she can't see his face and that he can't she can't react to his emotions and make him more emotional, and all of it is just this weird. Weird.
Yeah.
You know.
Go ahead.
Some of the sequences in that were so like strange that you have a hard time like figuring what some of it even is. Like Shun's talking to her from like as a human shaped indentation in like a rippling tree trunk. You know, it's hard to describe it, but like it's stuff like that where it's like, what is this? And but it's. The visceral impact it has is just really high. I really like that, and I like the fact that this thing has all these different moods and showcases all these different artists. In that you see, this is this person's unique vision of what this moment is, and you just go with it, you know.
Absolutely. And we ran a feature on the director of this written by Kevin Sirigueta on the site, and you can see a little bit about it. The director of this also directed a film that just came out called like Garakoa or something like that, and that's like a little like 60-minute cute girls in a computer thing. It's nothing like this, but I'm gonna go take a look at it just to look at it. I just want to gawk.
It had some interesting visual stuff going on in the same vein as this, but narratively not.
Watching the show though, like I will watch this guy's stuff. Right. Like if he makes something, check it out because I want to see. Like it feels like this dude had just visual concepts bursting out of his brain, and he just tipped his head over and let them all pour out. And it was it's an amazing artistic expression in the show. Like,
yeah, that's the other thing. While watching it, I was telling a friend who really loves the show, I was like, this could so easily have been, like, I think the books are good, I think that's a good story, but even then, this so easily could have been, like, super YA, light novel-y, eye roll.
Yeah.
Like, even the secret twist of they were humans all along is, you know, that could have been not good. And I think even though the book is good, like, this could have been very easily adapted into a very shruggo, like, novel-y anime thing. So the fact that it is, I think, one of the best anime I've ever seen is...
Yeah, me too. Like, I'm so shocked. This, like, I would have to put it on a top 10 all-time best anime I've ever seen.
Which is weird, because it's not one of my personal favorites. I didn't cotton to it. Like, it didn't speak to me on a deeper...
It didn't, like...
It's just really good. It's just solid. It's like Escaflowne, where it's like, this is just solid all the way through.
Yeah, it didn't reach into my heart, but I fell to my knees in awe of what it accomplished. Mm-hmm. And so I have to put it on a top 10.
Yeah, it's still a powerful story, don't get me wrong. It's just, it didn't get to my guts as much as, like, my favorite anime. It was just really impressive and really engrossing.
Yeah, this goes on my automatic shortlist. Oh, see that. Have you seen this? Mm-hmm. See that. Watch that.
Yeah.
Like, it's on Crunchyroll still. So, you know, yeah.
Just like bite your lip and cross your fingers when we get to the episode where everybody fucks everyone else.
Like, honestly, so much was made of that, and I just didn't. I thought it was just a story feature. Like, it was just this makes sense.
It's really funny.
It is funny because it's but I didn't. I was just like so enraptured that I was like, all right, I understand why these kids are fucking.
it's a thing that happens, and it's an important thing that happens, but it's not like the only thing that's worth talking about in this by a long shot.
Well, the manga, I feel like the manga, which apparently does make it like the only thing.
Yeah, and like in a different way. Like I only read the first book of the manga, and it's the thing that pissed me off about the manga is that it doesn't really understand what the point of this is, because, you know, sure, there's the ecchi scenes, but that doesn't bother me in isolation. What bothered me was the fact that, you know, the characters are like, oh boy, you know, Maria's wearing like 21st century blue stripe panties and saying things like, who's the naughty girl now, which is not something the characters in this society would say.
It doesn't seem like this show.
It just doesn't work, you know?
Well, I mean, you know, but and that's fine. It just means I won't read that. But, like, if they... Yeah. The book hasn't come out, right, in the
U.S.?
No,
that has not.
Okay, well, Yen Press, please, bring that over. I would love to read that. So
I would.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Would as well. I bet the sales on the Blu-rays did not justify bringing that novel over, but oh well. Yeah, man. All right. Anyone have final thoughts they'd like to add onto the end here?
I guess I'll say that, for me, this... Like you were saying about how you sort of, even though it didn't necessarily like really, really resonate with you personally, you know, for me it did. And I guess it's probably my number one.
Really?
And, yeah. And because of that, I think what's sort of special about this is that it's just sort of so blatant about, you know, it's the director's first directorial work. And you can kind of tell that they just sort of sat down and like, you know, We're gonna do the real thing. We're going to try to intentionally make a masterpiece, and this is what's gonna come out. You know, and even if you don't think the execution was necessarily the greatest, I think you kind of have to give it an A for effort at least.
Yeah,
you know?
It has that prestige piece feel to it. Even though it's a YA thing and it's obviously aimed at like teens and stuff, like it has that prestige piece feel because not only is there no opening theme. But, like, the opening credits change every time, and it's just very cinematic, and, like, here's the next installment of this grand epic sort of a thing. And the closing credits of the last episode are really powerful, because we didn't even say, like, what happens to Squealer. Like, what happens to Squealer is really, really hard to watch. He's despicable. He's not a likable fella. But, like, it's so hard to watch, and the way they treat it with this, like, respect and like sadness and like this long exhale is really, really powerful at the end. And basically there's this long walk up. Squealer is punished with eternal hell, where he is reduced to, like, basically he's blown up by telekinesis, and then his cells are regrown by telekinesis until he's just like the blob at the end of I Have No Mouth. Where he's alive, but there's no eyes, there's no nothing left, it's just like an organ. And so he's in a little glass box on display, just being a breathing organ. And there's this long walk-up that just shows him. It's like, this is the thing that's responsible for all this genocide and all this stuff. And the main character walks up to him and like attempts to connect with him for the first time. Because that's one of the other problems, is the protagonist was really mean to Squealer. Like, Squealer's not likable, but she's really mean to him and grossed out by him inordinately compared to the other characters. And so when she, at the end, as an adult, is like, you know, somebody who's 27 or 28 or whatever, and... walks up and tries to connect with him a little bit and says, you know, like, things could have been different. And then Mercy kills him. It's, you know, it's really powerful. Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, things could have been different. Like, going back 1,000 years, things could have been different.
And
it's just epic, you know.
And I also like how, like, it seems like another part of the reason that she kills him is because she's realizing, you know, hey, you know, is putting this on display, is this really a place that we want to be going with ourselves? You know, is this constructive in any way? Like, because to be honest, the humans and the rats sort of bring out the worst in each other in their conflict, and she's sort of realizing that, look, you know, we got to just sort of put this behind us and go on, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked that moment at the end. I thought that was cool. I feel like the end of that show wrapped up anything I had questions about and gave me enough nice little codas to where, like, I certainly don't need any more of this. And it answered all my questions.
Right.
So that's the other thing. Like, we're talking about this. I would imagine, like, if you haven't watched the show, which is probably most people listening to this, like, it all sounds a little confusing and heady and lofty and arty and all that stuff. But I just can't, sit down and start watching it and just give it a shot and give it a while. Give it a while. Like, watch one or two a day. Give it a week or something. But it's worth it. This show is worth your time. It will. If you're bored at the beginning, it rewards your patience. So just stick with it.
Yeah, if you grew up reading, like, giant anthologies of Ray Bradbury short stories, you should
watch. Yeah, this is just catnip. Totally.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. I'd most recommend this to, like, people who... like, you know, classic sci-fi, you know.
It's, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Alex Holt Cohen asks, what's From the New World most like in terms of pre-existing properties? So, again, I think The Hunger Games is a big one for me. But other anime, like I said, I think it tonally, I think it has a lot in common with Now and Then, Here and There. Story wise, no, but tonally, yeah, I think so.
It does not remind me of like basically any other anime. It is, except for maybe what Gen Urobuchi writes, but he writes in a completely different style. But like he's interested in the same sorts of things, like a psychopath. But yeah, it is not comparable to any other anime to me. It's comparable to like sci-fi that was written between the 20s and the 60s. Like, you know, basically.
Pretty damn unique for me. The one thing I'd put out there, with the caveat that it's the thing that only like me and my good friend like, and everyone else hates it, is Gene Shaft, which is another.
yeah, that's show. All right. I think that name came into my head recently for some reason. I can't remember why, but I feel like I'm one of three people who remember Gene Shaft.
You were making the quiz for the site about obscure.
Oh, yeah, and I was like, no one remembers Gene Shaft. That's not fair. I can't put that on there.
Answer of something else. But I think Gene Shaft's great. I think it is intellectual on par with almost on par with something like this. I think everyone disagrees with me about that, but. I'd say give it a shot. It is another thing where it's like humanity has had this cataclysm and must and has had to reorganize its structure to move on from that, and now is being tested again in a different sort of way. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Right. Okay. Navy Cherub asks, do you think the show has a slight exposition problem? For example, the false Munichiro's sudden info drop in episode 3 or 4. Okay, so a lot is made of this, too, is that the third episode is basically just an info dump. There's another one later that's basically just an info dump. I forget. Yes, it's a speed bump. Absolutely, it's a speed bump. It didn't bother me that much, and they had to get through all that exposition somehow. Yeah. Exposition like that is the hardest thing to figure out how to fit into a screenplay. Did they do it with elegance and grace? Nope. Do I really care? Nah.
Yeah, it was one of those things like this would have worked really well in a book where you're in the first 3 or 4 chapters and it's like, oh, I'm just living in this world with these characters, and then you have a chapter where it's just like, oh, my world has changed. But in a show, you're watching kids stand next to the slug dog and slug dog explains the world to them, and not so much. But it's not a big speed bump. It's just enough to where if you were a little put off before, that might put you the rest of the way off. But if you're already interested, it's just going to be, you know, okay, well, this could have been done better, but, you know, not without reorganizing the story a lot. And they shouldn't do that because the story is good. So, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, info dumps by themselves don't necessarily bother me. The kind of info dump that I don't like is when, like, a show will be, okay, here is where we will talk about all the conceptual stuff in this thing, and then never go back to it. And it's just like, here is why the pilots have to be high schoolers. And then, you know.
Or what's worse is Saki goes into a classroom, as you know, in our society.
That is the funny thing about this info dump is that it is completely natural, believe it or not. Like, it is like. A lot of info dumps are criticized because the characters start acting and saying things they wouldn't say. The problem with that is not that. The problem is just that it's an entire episode of them reading an encyclopedia. But by all rights, it is completely natural character for behavior for them to sit down with this thing and just read it in horror for 20 minutes. Like, yeah, of course. So.
And like, there's a lot of other conceptual matters that are revealed gradually over the course of the thing, too. Like, it's not just an all-in-one.
No,
you know?
Not at all.
Yeah, all right. Turquoise something. I apologize to you, whoever you are. Does the show work better as a turquoise piece? No, sure it doesn't work turquoise. As a turquoise piece. Ashley Woodward asks, does the show work better as a character piece or immersive sci-fi? Oh, immersive sci-fi.
Yeah.
100%.
The character development does really start to shine in the last third when they become adults. But prior to that, they are just kid A, kid B, kid C. And then when they start to become, when they hit age 16 or so, the character development is really intensive and it's great. But, it's mostly a Log Horizon style immersive sci-fi sort of experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I think both do really well, but, you know, the characters and who they are sort of come from and are caused by the world and the setting and all that stuff. So I'd say that's the primary interest there. Though Saki, I think, is a very fascinating type of, I guess you could say, heroic character in that she's complex and unique in a way that a lot of characters aren't, you know?
Yeah, she's not just audience proxy. They give her a distinct personality. And that's true of all her friends, too. It's just they have to hit adulthood first. As kids, they're a little bit interchangeable.
Yeah, and like with all her, her visions and stuff, you start to get to see a bit of how her mind works, and that she's pretty calm and pensive, but also is a little subversive and sly in some ways. And it's kind of funny, you know.
Open-minded yet stable was, I think, what they kind of settle on, and that the reason that she's prized by the leader of the society is she's like, oh, you're like open-minded, but not like a radical. You know, you're good.
Yeah.
All right. Tropical Blitz asks, does the visual style and the unusual animation lend itself well to the story, or is it just cool looking but not that essential? So I think the visual style is really important to this show, specifically because you're talking – so this is let me see if I can articulate this properly the way I'm thinking about this. This is something that is attempting to paint a gigantic canvas, sprawling story, lots of characters. Wisely, it keeps the cast fairly small, which you really have to do in a show that is painted on this big a canvas. It's trying to do this giant story about a completely different Earth, a completely different society. The dreamlike structure of not only the logic that takes place in the world, but what's happening in the world, and then the dreamlike nature of the visuals all combine to create a ethereal experience that is thematically coherent. Does that make sense? The fuzzy edges of the story are articulated through the fuzzy edges of the visuals, and so therefore the abstract surrealism is articulating the very tone and execution of the story itself. So it is important.
Yeah, I think it's also this is a story where you're watching sort of like a domesticated humanity, and so you're seeing things through the eyes of these kids that have been there were gaps sometimes where like they will show you three episodes ago that the kids remembered something wrong, like they were interrogated then had their memories erased or whatever, and we didn't even know for three episodes. So it has this sort of like brainwashed feeling to it where you're going through life in a haze along with these characters because they're not full humans. They are like genetically modified and conditioned to kind of be in this weird dream fugue state. And
I guess the future is weird and the depths of the human mind are weird, and you're going to have a lot of different kinds of moods and visuals, and but all with a sort of central concept does serve it very well.
All right. Okay. Tropical Blitz also asks, how do you read Mamoru's not being able or unwilling to conform to his society's traditions and choosing a lover because of his feelings for Mary? In particular, Saki's question, if feeling miserable is okay when being with anyone, even if he doesn't love them, like
I think he's like, why is Mamoru jealous while everyone else is just like, free love? And Mamoru just wants Maria. And he gets really uppity about the the way their society works sexually is that everybody should just have sex with everybody else all the time as much as they want.
Right.
But when it's when you reach a certain age, you form a duty pair, which means one guy and one girl
who agree to have
a child.
Yes.
And Mamoru doesn't engage in the free love stuff. Like, he doesn't have sex with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
While everyone else does. Yay! Boys have sex with boys. Boys have sex with girls. Girls have sex with girls. It's, you know, blah. But Mamoru just sits there and paints, because all he wants is Maria, and he's disappointed that, like, it seems like Maria is going to choose a more desirable man than him. And so that just kind of shuts him down completely, and he doesn't feel anything for anything. And I think that is meant to point out that the free love thing could be great for some people, but it would be bad for others. Mamoru is a very sensitive boy. He cares a lot what people think about him, and he's very, like, he's not open, and that's not okay for him, and he doesn't feel safe in that kind of free love environment. So, yeah, I think it was just meant to show that, like, you know, this society is not good for everybody. Like, some people just want devotion, and they're not really, this is not a good system for them. Even the duty pair thing is not a good system, because, like, people are just going to choose who's most advantageous to them in society to pair up with and have a child. And he wants to be paired with somebody that he loves, and that's not really part of the society. Even though everybody's loving everybody all the time, it's a downside.
I guess I think that this sort of indicating that, you know, Mamoru, he clearly has some kind of like emotional problems, and you kind of know that they're eventually going to kill him for that, and it's not his fault, but like, and he's supposed to be seen as like kind of whiny, and it's not like he isn't, but like I think that the point of that is to show that, you know, he likes Maria because she, unlike sort of other people in the society, is kind of unconditionally nurturing to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just kind of he has some sort of an issue that, and that's sort of just a manifestation of it. I guess it's kind of hard to explain, but.
Yeah, a lot of things in the show are kind of tough to explain. A lot of this stuff, it's all kind of fuzzy, dreamlike. You have to, thinking back on it, it's hard to articulate exactly what it was trying to do. But in the moment, it's, you know, it all makes sense. It's all,
And Maria, for her part, is, by all accounts, a lesbian. Like, the Maria is not interested in men sexually at all. But that's not what duty pairing is about, you know. So, but for her part, gives up on the girl that she loves to protect Mummer. Like, she puts her own sexual and romantic feelings underneath caring for others, which is kind of ironic. Mummer's name is the one that means protector, but Maria is the most protective character, and you know, she's the one who kind of runs away with him and takes care of him. And so, I think that that's valuable. Like, even though she didn't love him in that way, like, he got what he wanted, you know, kind of.
You know what,
until they got murdered in the wilderness. But anyway.
What's funny to me is I didn't really read it that way. I sort of took it as that all the members of Group 1, which is the group which has all the main characters, I think they all sort of loved each other in their own way, and they were all had the capacity for attraction to each other. And it's just that sort of circumstances were what ultimately dictated who ended up with who for real. You know, like for... You know, Sakuru and Saki, they have both this emotional connection that they both like Shun, but for different reasons, and those reasons are kind of compatible with each other anyway, and it makes its own kind of thing, and everyone's relationship with each other is different, but is a real thing.
Oh, yeah, they all love each other in some way. I just thought Maria kind of makes it clear in her last letter that she's not in love with Mamoru, she just loves him dearly, and she would put her life under... making sure he survives and, you know, all this other stuff. But, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of tragic shit like that going on.
It's sad.
All right, let's see here. All right, okay, the last question for DM asks, I know you usually watch subs. I do, and I did this time. But do you check out the dub? Did you check out the dub? I did not. Did anyone watch the dub? Max, did you watch the dub?
I did.
How is it?
I think it's very good. Most all the characters are pretty damn spot on. Saki's spot on. Kiramaru's amazing. Tomiko's really good. Satoru is kind of shaky at the beginning, and that's the only complaint I'd have, but he gets better too.
Right. Okay. All right. I guess that about wraps us up. Okay, Max, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about From the New World. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, great to be here.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Max for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating or review. We'd really appreciate it. And I'll see you all next week.